Hello and welcome to the Unity Presbyterian Church podcast. This week in worship, Pastor David looks at three women from Romans chapter 16. What did Paul have to say about these women and what can we learn from this? Let's listen.
Well, so my grandparents, we called them Oma and Opa, they immigrated from Holland when they were in their early 20s. Which means I think I'm, a third generation immigrant? And so even though my grandparents were Dutch through and through, I really only knew my Dutch heritage through food. And really, I was quite excited every time my Oma and Opa would come visit because they would bring treats from the Dutch store. And they would bring things like peppermints or stroke waffles or black licorice. If you like that, I never was quite into that, but they would always bring it. But they also brought with them something that I got excited for every single time they visited, something called hoggleslaw. Now, I think we've got a picture of hoggleslaw. In fact, I took this in my kitchen this week because I wanted to share with you just the genius of hoggleslaw. You may have never heard of it before because, again, it's a Dutch delicacy, but it's something where you sprinkle it on top of your toast either during lunch or breakfast. So it's really, really easy. You toast your bread, you put on a nice thick layer of butter, and then you sprinkle on the hoggleslaw, and it is just delicious. And so this was the treat that I would look forward to every time that my Oma and Opa would come to visit. And even up until the time I went to college, I would go to college, and they were the really nice grandparents that would send a care package to college, and I'd look forward to it. I'd tear it open, I'd find the hoggleslaw, and I'd bring it with me to the cafeteria. And the first time that I ever noticed that this was different or strange was when I met my soon-to-be wife, Sarah. You see, I'm sitting there sprinkling on this hoggleslaw, and she's looking at me from across the table in the cafeteria, and she goes, "Why are you putting chocolate sprinkles on top of your bread?" And I looked at her, and I said, "What do you mean chocolate sprinkles? This is hoggleslaw. This is my Dutch heritage. This is not chocolate sprinkles." And then I went back to my dorm room and I took a closer look and I realized, oh my goodness, for all of these years, I've been putting chocolate sprinkles onto my toast at breakfast or lunch and just calling it hoggleslaw. I don't know if you've ever had that experience before where you have a new piece of information. You learn something new and you can't unlearn it. It really did change the game for me. I could never quite look at hoggleslaw the same. I just looked at it and said, "Oh, that's chocolate sprinkles. I can't eat this anymore." Have you had that? Where you learn something, a new piece of information, and you just can't go back. You can't unlearn it. Maybe for you, it was you learned how hot dogs were made and said, "Well, that's it for me. I can't eat those anymore." There are some things we can't just get out of our minds. Well, my hope is that we learn something new about Paul today, something that changes our perspective and our understanding of Paul, particularly in Paul's view of women in ministry. There are many views on Paul and women on ministry, probably all over the place, and some of us have probably come across verses that didn't make a lot of sense to us, that maybe seemed backwards or offensive, and so we just dismiss Paul altogether. But I don't want to do that because there's so much good in Paul, and I think Paul was actually a major advocate of women in ministry. And so I'm hopeful that we can learn a new perspective together today as we study what he truly said about women in that time period. So first, though, for us to dive into this topic, we need to understand how people believed generally in the first century because we don't live in the first century. I mean, that was 2,000 years ago, and so we need to look at other sources from around that time period and how they viewed and treated women. And so there's a famous Jewish historian. His name was Josephus, and this, unfortunately, gives you an example of how women were thought of or treated in the first century. Josephus says this, "The woman, says the law, is in all things inferior to the man. Let her accordingly be submissive, for the authority has been given by God to the man." So you can see what's happening there. First, in the first century, oftentimes they viewed women as inferior to men. And because of that, then they said, so they must be submissive to men. And then they put God into it, and they said, because of God, God created things this way. It was a really horrible and sad way to view the genders, that God created equally. They were not living that out in the first century. And yet, this is the world that Paul lived in. This is the world that Paul was creating the church in. And so our question is, okay, in that context, in the world that Paul was living in, well, what did Paul have to say about women in ministry? Well, to get the answer to that, we're going to study Romans chapter 16. Now, this is the chapter that, if you've read Romans before, you've probably skipped this chapter. And there's a reason for that. The first 15 chapters of Romans have so much good theology in it, so much good understanding and discussion about God. And then the last chapter, chapter 16, is Paul just sending greetings to people. Greetings to people that we probably don't know or don't really know well. And so most times we kind of skip and go, okay, I'm done. I've reached the end of Romans. But Paul actually lifts up some really, really interesting characters in this last chapter of Romans. And I want to introduce you to three women in particular that Paul writes to or writes about. And so let's begin our time together in Romans chapter 16 in the first two verses. Paul says this, I commend to you our sister Phoebe, a deacon of the church in Caesarea, and I ask you to receive her in the Lord in a way worthy of his people and to give her any help that she may need from you, for she has been the benefactor of many people, including me. Okay, so Paul wants this church in Rome to warmly receive this person, Phoebe, or to welcome her warmly. Now, Paul would often say that about someone at the end of his letters. Because think about it. Paul would write this letter, and then there was no post office. He couldn't just put it in the mail. And so he would write this letter and then have to give it to someone to say, now you, please be the messenger and go take this letter to the church that I'm writing it to. And so in this case, that's Phoebe. Paul's writing this letter to the Romans, and then he gives that Roman to Phoebe, that letter to Phoebe, and he's telling them this church in Rome, please welcome her, warmly, warmly welcome her. Now, what's interesting is that the person who delivered that letter was oftentimes then the first person to read that letter to the church and to answer any questions or interpret that letter. And so Paul is giving this letter to Phoebe and says, please take it to this church in Rome, read it for them, and then answer any questions that they might have about it. Now, we studied Romans earlier this year, and I wish we had a Phoebe that I could ask, wait, what did Paul mean here? Or I'm confused at this section. Please help interpret what Paul meant here. That was Phoebe's job. Phoebe's job was to go and share a little bit more about, well, here's what Paul meant when he wrote this letter to the Romans. And not only that, but she is called a major benefactor of Paul. Now, so Phoebe is a single person, it seems like, possibly widowed, we're not sure, but she was a benefactor in the sense that she supported Paul out of her own ministry. Now, interestingly enough, in the 4th century, we came across an inscription that called a person named Sophia. They said she's the new Phoebe because she gave so generously to the church. So that's how Phoebe was known, as this person who gave generously to the church, a major benefactor to the church. And then, I don't know if you caught this, Phoebe was also called a deacon. A deacon in the early church was a person who taught and preached and who cared for the poor. And that's what Phoebe did. And so we're introduced in these first two letters in chapter 16 of Romans to this person named Phoebe. And what we want to know about her, we'll get on the slide, is this, that Phoebe was entrusted with the letter to Rome, was a leader in the early church, and was one of Paul's major benefactors. It makes you wonder, who else did Paul mention in Romans chapter 16? Well, I'm glad you asked, because we're going to keep on reading. The next verse says this, and greet Priscilla and Aquila, my co-workers in Christ Jesus. They risked their lives for me. And not only I, but all the churches of the Gentiles are grateful to them. Greet also the church that meets at their house. Okay, so who are Priscilla and Aquila? I wonder if you recognize their names, because they pop up quite a few times in the New Testament. They are a husband and wife duo. They're co-workers with Paul, is how Paul phrases it. And they first meet actually in the book of Acts. And so Priscilla and Aquila meet Paul in Acts chapter 18. We read their story here. It says, after this, Paul left Athens and went to Corinth. And there he met a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife, Priscilla. Because Claudius was the Roman emperor at that time, because Claudius had ordered all the Jews to leave Rome. So Paul went to see them, and because he was a tent maker as they were, he stayed and worked with them. So Priscilla and Aquila were living in Italy. They had to leave because at that time the Roman emperor expelled all of the Jews from Rome. And so they had to leave. They ended up in Corinth. And in Corinth they met Paul. And apparently they were all tent makers. That's what they did for a profession. And so they bonded over their faith and they bonded over their profession and got to know one another. In fact, they bonded so well with one another that when Paul left to go on a missionary journey to Ephesus, Priscilla and Aquila came with him and said, well, we want to go and be missionaries with you. And when they're in Ephesus, Priscilla and Aquila met someone really interesting named Apollos. Let's read about their interaction next. This is jumping down to verse 24. It says, meanwhile, a Jew named Apollos, a native of Alexandria, came to Ephesus. Now, here's how Apollos is described. He was a learned man with a thorough knowledge of the scriptures. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and he spoke with great fervor and taught about Jesus accurately. Though he knew, and how interesting is this, though he knew only the baptism of John, meaning John the Baptist. And he began to speak boldly in the synagogue, but when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they invited him to their home and explained to him the way of God more adequately. Okay, so Apollos here is described as a learned man. He's described as a person with a thorough knowledge of the scriptures. He's a preacher who spoke boldly and fervently, and yet he had a big gap in his understanding of faith. And his big gap was about Jesus. He spoke about faith, but he was missing something central about who Jesus was and how Jesus changed really the whole Christian faith. And so one day he's in the synagogue and he's preaching and he's sharing with people about faith, and Priscilla and Aquila are there sitting in the synagogue. And they invite him back to their home, and then our scriptures say they then explain the faith more adequately. How interesting is that? Priscilla and Aquila must have been pretty good theologians. They must have known their faith pretty well because they were able to speak to this man who is a learned man with great knowledge of the scriptures, and they were able to move him from a John the Baptist type faith to a Jesus type faith. What we're told is then Apollos' life really changed after that. He started teaching the full expression of Christianity, and that started having a big impact on the world. In fact, the next verse says this: when Apollos wanted to go to Achaia, the brothers and sisters encouraged him and wrote to the disciples there to welcome him. When he arrived, he was a great help to those who by grace had believed. For he vigorously refuted his Jewish opponents in public debate, proving from the scriptures that Jesus was the Messiah. So apparently Apollos liked public debate. That would never be my forte, but he enjoyed it. And so in public debate, he was so shaped by how Priscilla and Aquila had taught him that he then took that faith and started really teaching and debating and purporting that faith in the whole region. That's who Priscilla and Aquila were. Now, I bet you're wondering at this point, okay, why haven't we heard more sermons on these women? They're doing some pretty incredible things. And I know, but before we get to that point, I want to introduce you to one more that Paul shares with us and writes to. And her name was Junia. The next verse says this. He says, greet my dear friend Empedocles, who was the first convert to Christ in the province of Asia. Greet Mary, who worked very hard for you. And greet Andronicus and Junia, my fellow Jews who had been in prison with me. They are outstanding among the apostles, and they were in Christ before I was. Okay, we need to figure out who Andronicus and Junia are, because Paul just heaped on some really outstanding praise for them. So one, they're another husband and wife duo, with Andronicus being the husband and Junia being the wife. They've spent time in prison with Paul, because again, people were thrown into prison for preaching about Jesus, and so you know that they've really grown close to Paul. They've shared experiences with Paul, and they've spent time in prison together for preaching the gospel. We're also told that they became Christians even before Paul, and so they've known Christ a very long time, and they are considered outstanding among the apostles. What interesting, strong praise is that? Now remember, to be an apostle during this time period meant that you weren't really one of the original 12 disciples, but you were one of the people who lived right after that, who would still go travel around on missionary journeys, sharing about the faith and preaching and teaching. People like Barnabas, who often traveled with Paul, Barnabas is called an apostle. James, the brother of Jesus, James is called an apostle. And then here you have Junia being called outstanding among the apostles. In fact, in the 4th century, so only a couple hundred years after these people lived, there was a famous pastor who said this about this passage. We'll get this on the screen. He said, "To be an apostle is something great. But to be outstanding among the apostles, just think, what a wonderful song of praise that is. They were outstanding on the basis of their works and virtuous actions. Indeed, how great the wisdom of this woman must have been that she was even deemed worthy of the title apostle." Now, I came across something very interesting in my studies this week. There have been those in the church that never really wanted women to be in leadership, in positions of leadership. And so actually, in about the 12th century, someone came along this verse and was translating all of these and changed the name Junia to the male counterpart Junius. Because they thought, there's no way there was a female apostle that was outstanding among the apostles. And so they actually changed the name. In fact, we have a slide that says how they kind of did that, changing from Junia to Junius. This was not caught until the 1950s. Can you believe that? So if you have still a Bible from the 1950s, for example, the New Revised or the Revised Standard Version, it would have Junius in there, which is the male version of this name. Eventually, translators didn't just go back to the translation before. They went way back and determined, hey, we've been translating this wrong. And they've updated it. So all the Bibles since the 1950s have this updated name, but that goes to show just how uncomfortable this could make people, particularly as the church began to develop. But what do we know about Paul? Well, here's what we know about Paul so far. Paul believed, and we'll get this on the screen, that God used men and women to preach, teach, and establish churches. I mean, you combine this with God's witness in the Old Testament of using people like Miriam with Moses, or Deborah in the book of Judges, or Huldah, one of our female prophets, and it paints a pretty beautiful picture of the way that God was using everybody to go and share his message with the world. We need to use all of this that we know about Paul then to interpret when we come across a challenging verse from Paul. And so why don't we end our time by reading through one of those challenging verses to then say, okay, how do we interpret this in light of everything that we just studied this morning? One of them that you might be familiar with comes from 1 Timothy. Paul says this, "Therefore, I want men everywhere to pray, lifting up holy hands without anger or disputing. I also want the women to dress modestly with decency and propriety, adorning themselves not with elaborate hairstyles or gold or pearls or expensive clothes, but with good deeds, appropriate for women who profess to worship God." Okay, so there's a couple of issues that are happening with this church in Ephesus that Paul is writing to. One is that the men couldn't pray without becoming angry. He says, that's an issue. He goes, I need you guys to stop lifting your hands in anger when you're supposed to be praying to God. And the other, he says, and there's this group of women who are dressing immodestly and not instead coming to worship with good deeds. And so he's writing about specific things that he's seeing in this congregation that he's trying to teach and change. But then he goes on and says this, which just kind of makes us cringe. He says, "And a woman should learn in quietness and full submission. I do not permit a woman to teach or to assume authority over a man. She must be quiet." So we read that and go, wait, so women shouldn't preach in church. But for Paul, that didn't apply to Phoebe, who he sent to be one of the first commentators of the book of Romans. And it doesn't seem like that applied to Priscilla, a man who taught Apollo, or a woman who taught a man, Apollos, about faith in Jesus Christ. And it doesn't appear to apply to Junia, who Paul called outstanding among the apostles. And so we need to say, well, then, what do we do with this? And how do we interpret properly this text? Well, therefore, most commentators interpret this as addressing a specific situation of this church in Ephesus and not a universal principle for all time. I mean, the unfortunate truth is that women in the first century did not have as many opportunities for education as men did. And so most commentators believe that there was a small select group of women that were not yet educated and yet were trying to take over kind of the worship services in this particular church. And so Paul seems to be speaking to them to say, hey, we must learn first and then speak in church. In fact, one of those commentators, Scott McKnight, says this. We'll get this on the screen. He says, "The teaching that Paul prohibits then is unorthodox theology. Until these young women are informed, and until they are formed in character, they need to be learners. And the same can be said for men, who in Paul's world just had more opportunities to learn." And so when Paul says they need to learn in quietness and full submission, he's speaking here of deference to the wise teachers and elders who are orthodox and godly, and not to a permanent condition of utter silence. And so once they learn, they will be ready to teach and to travel from house to house church to impart wisdom and to demonstrate godliness. And so what is our takeaway from studying Paul this morning? Well, I would think our takeaway is that in a world that so often disenfranchises women, we need to hold up a faith that empowers all people, men and women combined. I mean, too many churches have unintentionally robbed women of their God-given gift to preach and to teach the faith of Jesus Christ. And so in light of that, we must remember the Phoebes, the Priscillas, and the Junias who stand up as an example for us all. Amen.
If you would like more information about Unity Presbyterian Church, please visit our website at www.unitypres.org or visit us on Facebook. This is the Unity Presbyterian Church Podcast. Have a great week.